Hi everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of Vegan World. This week it is my very great pleasure to welcome onto the show Emma Hurst, MLC, who earlier in 2019 was elected to the New South Wales Parliament in Australia, representing the Animal Justice Party. Now, if getting elected wasn't impressive enough, then what came after certainly was. Emma's maiden speech in Parliament caught the public attention on social media all around the world for its heartfelt and powerful message and the delivery on her commitment to ending the unnecessary suffering of animals. In today's interview, we talk about that, but also what led Emma into the vegan lifestyle and what drives her desire to keep campaigning and the reaction that she's experienced since her election. Sit back, relax, and enjoy today's show. Thanks, guys. So, hello and welcome to Vegan World to the Honourable Emma Hurst, MLC. Hi Emma, how are you?
I'm well, thank you for having me here.
Absolute pleasure. Now, as listeners will have heard at the start of the show in the introduction, you've been elected to the New South Wales Parliament earlier this year in 2019. Before we get into all of that and your election and your background work with the Animal Justice Party, can you talk to us a little bit about how you first became interested in and aware, I guess, as well, of animal rights and how that led to you adopting a vegan lifestyle?
Yeah, well, I mean, when I sort of think back to it, I think it all comes down to one incident when I was just a young girl and I was hugging a hen and I was patting this hen and the hen was actually purring. And even though I'm not sure exactly how old I was, maybe about 7 or 8 years old, and we had rescue cats at home that we had rescued, and I realised that this hen shows joy and interaction the same way as my cat at home did. And I remember thinking, you know, if I couldn't eat my cat at home, then I couldn't eat this hen either. So I went vegetarian when I was really quite young. I started writing my parents letters to say that I didn't want to eat animals anymore. But it was actually many years later that somebody just handed me a flyer on the streets. And I went online and I read about what happens in the egg industry and the dairy industry. And it was like somebody just turned the lights on. You know, I had been a vegetarian that was just completely unaware of animal abuse in other industries. And, you know, I was trying to do the best that I could. But, you know, I was totally in the dark. You know, I had no idea that the dairy industry took the bobby calves away to be slaughtered, that male chicks in the egg industry are macerated at 1 day old. And, you know, once I found that out, I really changed the way I eat, the way I dress, everything just overnight.
It's interesting you say that, actually, because a lot of people think when they're made aware, whatever, you know, the trigger happens to be, whether it's, you know, like you said, your interaction with animals at a younger age or someone just handing them a flyer on the street, they... Similar to myself, I first became vegetarian, and at that time I thought that was enough. And then, like yourself, I got to understand about the horrors of the dairy industry and the egg industry as well. And then I had to become vegan. But then, like, after a while, that wasn't enough as well. And I wanted to get involved in activism as well. Now, similar to yourself, I suppose you then obviously decided to get involved in activism, which ultimately led to you joining the Animal Justice Party, which this year. Congratulations, by the way, led
Thank
to your
you.
election to the New South Wales Legislative Council. Can you talk to us about that and the process involved in that and how that all came about?
So, I mean, I was studying psychology at university at the time. And, you know, when I was hearing about people and helping people, I realised, you know, that this was a really important area to work in. But my passion was really in protecting animals and ending animal cruelty. But I continued my studies in psychology because I knew that animal cruelty was a human-caused problem and therefore the solution was also human behaviour change. So I ended up doing my master's in health psychology. And, you know, I worked in a variety of settings such as drug and alcohol, child therapy, counselling, group therapy. But then I also started working for an organisation called Animal Liberation. and I worked in campaigns there, and I was able to use my psych degree to understand how to run a campaign where you're asking people to actually change their behaviours. So, not attending the circus, not attending a dolphinarium, but also encouraging people to change their buying behaviours, things that are sort of happening automatically, the things that they eat when they go out to restaurants or that they cook every night for their families. You know, behaviour change is quite complex and difficult. So I did, I worked there for 10 years, and I also worked for people for the ethical treatment of animals as their media officer. And I also worked internationally for World Animal Protection in campaign mobilisation. So studying and researching how to get people to change their behaviour, right across the world. So when my colleague from Animal Liberation, Mark Pearson, approached me, so he ran in the first Animal Justice Party election. So the party's only been around for a few years, really. And he ran in the first New South Wales election. He was the first MP for the Animal Justice Party. And he came and asked me if I was willing to run in the next election, which was 4 years after his election. And I guess I really sort of had to stop because I'd been working for these animal charities and working in campaigns, and I really sort of had to consider, you know, where am I best placed to help animals? And, you know, I can see this massive consumer shift that's happening. You know, in Australia where we are, you know, it's one of the fastest growing vegan markets right across the world. We're seeing corporate ethics changing. We're seeing them make pledges towards more animal-friendly practices and avoiding some of the most cruel industries like using caged eggs and things like that. So there's this massive shift in those areas, but you look at the politics in Australia and we're just years and years and years behind. You know, the governments are falling behind on animal protection laws. They don't meet the community expectations. You know, we have some of the worst animal welfare laws in the world, as far as I consider it. We still have animals performing demeaning and meaningless tricks in circuses throughout New South Wales. Australia is very heavily invested and involved in the very cruel live export trade. You know, we use hideous poisons like 1080 poison on animals, which is known to cause prolonged suffering. You know, so we're just so far behind in those areas. And so I sort of thought, well, this is probably the area where we need the biggest drive and the fastest change. And so that's why I ended up deciding to run.
Absolutely. Now, just before we come on to talk specifically about the laws and what have you about how animals are treated, and I've saw some of the really important stories that you've posted online, Emma, and it's amazing actually, you know, that you can draw attention to that and you have that platform to be able to do that. But the Animal Justice Party themselves just don't focus on that. They also focus on some issues like disability rights or for asylum seekers and civil rights and campaigning against violence against women, etc. Isn't that correct?
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm a really strong believer in this notion called One Welfare. And it's something that's gaining a lot of momentum here in Australia as well. And it looks at the interconnectedness of humans, animals and the environment, and that we really need to be progressive in all three areas. And in fact, focusing on one area while neglecting the other two actually doesn't create progress in the way that it should. So a lot of our campaigns, and one campaign that we're working on a lot, that we're going to plan to work on a lot next year, is the link between domestic violence and animal abuse. So we've actually been meeting with a lot of domestic violence abuse networks and community groups throughout New South Wales. And we've got a round table that we're planning with a lot of DV groups, particularly on this issue, because it's a really interesting one, because violence is something that just absolutely does not discriminate. The research shows that if somebody is violent towards an animal, they're also very likely to be violent towards a human and vice versa. And if we neglect violence towards animals and we don't treat it with the seriousness that it deserves on a legislative basis, then we're never truly going to overcome issues like domestic violence and elder and child abuse, because it's actually all... it's all the same behaviour. It's all the same cause and effect. So that's why we also look into those areas like disability rights, LGBTQI rights, asylum seekers, civil rights. And you know, it's all part and parcel of one thing. And so we've got unity principles that myself and my colleague Mark Pearson agreed on when I got elected, and we've put those up on our website so that people understand where we stand on all of those issues.
I think that's awesome, actually, because some of the things I come across online when I see, you know, people campaigning for animal rights, like Anonymous for the Voiceless or PETA or people like that, when they're chatting to people just in the street or whatever it happens to be, and they, you know, some of the comments they'll get back from some individuals, not everyone, of course, they'll say, oh, why don't you campaign for human rights or, you know, violence against women. It's not a binary decision, you know, it's not a one or other type of thing. The things can be related, like you said. So I think that's really important what you're doing also to draw those conclusions. Emma, over here in the UK and in Ireland, we first became aware of you when your maiden speech was broadcast on Facebook here, and it was such an eloquent speech. You could tell it was really from the heart. And I watched it a couple of times because I was like, I found it actually quite moving. It was absolutely fantastic. Oh, now, when you made that, how did you find the reaction from some of the other parliamentarians when you actually made that speech?
It was really interesting, actually. A lot of them came up to me afterwards and said that, you know, I had mentioned things that they hadn't actually thought about, like bobby cars being taken from their mothers. So I think for some it was educational. For some that were sort of more progressively minded, a few of them came up and said that they were considering going vegan.
Oh, wow.
So, look, I think it's really powerful to be able to speak without anger. And I think that, you know, look, it's okay to be angry, and I still get angry myself, but, you know, if we stay in a place of anger, it can be really ineffective for our own self-care, but it also creates an ineffective message if we're always speaking from a place of anger. And it's something that I notice particularly here in politics, because people are so divided, and anger just creates more division. And it sort of creates that excuse around neglecting to hear other people's stories or neglecting to hear the truth of a situation. So I really tried to come at it both from a personal perspective and to give the stories of the animals and what they're actually going through, but also to come from a place of hope and a place of moving forward, rather than focusing on the anger and frustration that, you know, that this is a movement that has been going for so many years with such little progressive change in that political landscape.
Absolutely. Now, just on that topic, actually, you've made tremendous progress in some of the campaigns that you've been involved in, Emma, such as the duck producers and their subsequent prosecution in Australia, and also the burger chains. They were unbelievably selling rabbit meat. Talk to me about a couple of those campaigns, if you will.
So they're campaigns that I ran before I came into politics. So the first one was about a company called Pepe's Ducks. And I was actually putting together a report on the entire industry, because it was something that a lot of animal charities throughout Australia had very little knowledge about in regards to duck farming in general. And when I started to look at their advertising, I think they said something like open range ducks, and they had this image of this duck on water outside. And I contacted a barrister friend of mine, and I said, look, I think that this is a little bit misleading, because they keep all the ducks without water inside a duck shed with no outside access. And he agreed with me. So we ended up getting people to gather evidence from every state and territory in Australia. And we went to several of the major supermarket chains and actually took photos of the packaging inside the supermarket, because the evidence needed to be that a significant number of consumers would be misled by these marketing claims. So we were able to show that, you know, in the major supermarkets, these claims were being made right across Australia, and so it was a huge number of consumers that were being misled by this marketing. And so we presented the case to the ACCC and they took it on. And Love a Duck was found guilty of misleading and deceptive conduct with their advertising. And while there was media around that happening, there was a second major duck producer, and I heard them on the radio and they said, well, you know, that's that company. We would never do that to consumers. So I had a little closer look at their advertising, and they were saying, you know, born and raised in the spacious Wimmera wheatlands or something along those lines. And yeah. I said, okay, but the wheatlands might be spacious, but why would you choose to use that word on your advertising when your sheds and the tiny space that these ducks were provided was not spacious? So we did the same thing again and presented it to the ACCC, and they took them to court as well. And they were also found guilty. And then there was a burger chain that sold rabbit meat burgers over Easter. And we started a petition and we were emailing them and campaigning against it. And they were just simply ignoring us. And again, it actually came back to this consumer protection law and the ACCC, where I went onto their website and they said that they don't use any meat or animal flesh from intensive farms. But of course, in Australia, there's no such thing as, you know, a free-range rabbit meat facility, because rabbits are actually considered an unwanted introduced species in Australia. So they're not allowed to do any sort of free-range farming of rabbit meat. So they're all in cages, intensively farmed, like in a battery cage. So I emailed them and I said, look, you know, I've contacted the ACCC about these two duck companies and they were both taken to court. And I've noticed on your website you say to your consumers that you don't use any intensively farmed meat. However, these rabbit burgers that you had have come from battery caged facilities. So so I'm just writing to the ACCC now.
Yeah.
And they rang me immediately and they said, oh, no, we won't do it again. So they made a promise never to sell rabbit meat burgers again, and they didn't. The following Easter, they did another burger, which they called the rabbit burger, but it was completely vegan instead of using rabbits.
Oh, wow.
So that was a nice big turnaround. Yes.
Fantastic. What a victory that was. Well done, you.
Yeah. So, yeah, we are getting there. But, yeah, it's just almost seems to be an uphill battle, I think.
Absolutely. Particularly when you talk about industry and different companies within it. I think one of the things that really jumped out of when I was looking at the Animal Justice Party's website and your own website, Emma, was the ongoing campaign around what they call the Ag Gag laws, which is basically around the transparency of the Australian animal agriculture industry and letting the public see what goes on. Could you talk to us a little bit about that and what that campaign looks like and how you're involved in that?
Yeah, so we've got a very right-wing conservative government in New South Wales, but also federally. And so they've been pushing for ag gag laws, both federally across Australia, but also in New South Wales. And I think the reality is that, you know, veganism and animal rights activism has increased. And, you know, Australians love animals. They can't stand any act of animal cruelty. But as we've seen, you know, a big shift in consumer awareness over the last few years, thanks to undercover investigations, we've also seen, you know, a lifting of that veil and a bit more transparency. And people are choosing to change their eating habits. And that's why we're seeing such a fast growth market in veganism. But of course, there's a minority of people who make a lot of money out of animal suffering and who have a vested interest in ensuring that the public don't find out what's actually happening behind closed doors, that they aren't aware of intensive farming or animal mutilations that happen behind closed doors. And so they've been lobbying and pushing these conservative governments for ag gag laws. And I was elected in April this year. And the New South Wales government, since I've been elected, has actually shoved in two forms of ag gag one in form of a regulation and one in form of legislation. We fought both of them, and we even tried to put up amendments to protect whistleblowers working within the industry. Mm-hmm. So this is a slaughterhouse worker. If they ring an animal rights charity or an animal welfare charity, because what happens in these sort of abattoirs and slaughterhouses is there's an act of animal cruelty. If they ring the authorities, either the authorities don't act on it, or if they do show up and bring an inspector, the act of animal abuse obviously ceases as soon as there's an inspector on site. And then they leave and they say they didn't find anything, and so the cruelty continues. And so a lot of these workers who are being exposed to this quite extreme animal abuse then will ring an animal welfare or animal advocacy organisation to say, look, how do I stop this? How do we expose this? Now, simply for making that phone call under the new Ag Act laws that the government has been pushing through, that worker is now looking at a jail sentence. Wow. Just for making the phone call. That's how extreme these Ag Act laws are. So, it's clearly coming from a place of fear. Mm. They're trying to shut it down and close the doors and trying to stop consumers being aware of what's happening. And I think a lot of it is also backfired. I think people are just becoming more and more aware and more concerned about what it is that the government is actually trying to hide. So I think it will, I don't think it's going to work in the way that they'd hoped so.
Well, good for you and good for the party for highlighting it, Emma. I think it's quite interesting. I was talking to an activist a couple of weeks ago about this very topic, and they were comparing it to, I think it was in the late 1980s, early 90s in the US, about the big tobacco. When they were coming under a lot of threat and a lot of pressure from people going to their doctors and suing the insurance companies, you know, and they're saying they got cancer from smoking and you never told us this, and et cetera, et cetera. And they were almost considering making it a federal offence for anyone to criticise any of these companies, you know, that would call into question their ability to make profit. I mean, you can see that almost in modern day societies all around the world. It's my opinion for what it's worth, but I think the meat industry is the new big tobacco, you know, and we'll probably look back in 20, 30, 40 years, you know, and view it that way.
Oh, yeah, and people will think it's absolutely hideous and shocking, and, you know, was this ever allowed to happen? But, so we're right in the middle of the big fight.
Keep up the good work. You will win. On a slightly more lighter note, tell me, Emma, what has been your favourite piece of news from this year as we wrap up 2019, apart from your own election, of course?
Actually going back to the election, I think one of the best pieces of news that actually came out was actually when we came out of that election, because when the final count for the election was being drawn, a very hard right-wing conservative by the name of David Lionhelm had come out publicly saying that he'd won the seat. And he's pro-intensive farming. He's spoken out in support of intensive farming. He's anti-PETA. And, of course, when I actually won the seat, it was all over the media that he'd been outvoted by a vegan bodybuilder, former employer of PETA, who was working to end intensive farming. So it gave the media a field day, and they came up with some really creative and wonderful angles. And I think it was also just really good for, people who are part of this sort of compassionate push to change and to, you know, to protect animals and for kindness, and evidence that we really do have, the numbers in our end of the court, rather than these extremists who are trying to protect industry.
Absolutely. You touched on something there, Emma, just with regards to the media in particular. Here in the UK, and all around the world for that matter, there's been a lot of focus on Extinction Rebellion, for example. And indeed, at the minute, there's the talks that had been going on in Madrid to try and address climate change. When I see any of the news reports, whether it's from a US agency or wherever it happens to be, They're always talking about carbon emissions and people taking less flights here, or, you know, cutting down their consumption of water, whatever it happens to be. No one in the media, to my mind, seems to focus really on the impact of agricultural farming on the fact that the world is heating up at an alarming rate. What's your view on that?
Oh, look, it's really, really difficult to get anything in the media. You know, when I hear and speak to other politicians, and, you know, they approach media with story ideas, which I think are, you know, half as interesting as the things that we're coming up with. And I mean, we can pitch to 50 different journalists a really explosive story and get absolutely nowhere with it. And somebody will give, you know, a weak pitch on something and it'll get picked up straight away. I mean, I think it all just comes down to really powerful lobby groups for industry. I also think that, you know, the industry, I'm not sure about overseas, but the industry here has been very clever around framing. There's been a lot of sort of victim framing around the people that are making a lot of money. And so there's a lot of sympathy, you know, in Australia, they're often called the battlers. And it's a bizarre thing because there's kind of, you know, people have this idea that there's these Aussie battlers is how it's perceived, that are doing it tough. And then at the same time, I've seen them do interviews and say that, you know, by stopping live exports, they've lost $700,000 in 3 months. And it's like, well, hang on, nobody else is earning $700,000 in 3 months.
Exactly.
So how are you a battler?
Very limited sympathy.
I mean, they've really played on that, and there's a huge sympathy for people within these industries, and that's also made it very difficult. So they've kind of created a narrative that has gained a lot of public support. And so people are very divided here. And the media are very nervous about speaking out on things. But people are also very aggressive here as well. So I know that there's been a few celebrities that have spoken out on, you know, live export or other issues which have, you know, been exposed for extreme animal cruelty. And then they've come out and actually publicly apologised and taken it back, because they just said that they had received so many death threats and that their family had received death threats. And, you know, it's really bizarre. And I mean, it goes back to, you know, what we were talking before about that cycle of violence. You know, somebody that's violent towards an animal won't hesitate to be violent towards a person. And so there's this fear around speaking out against certain groups. And I know that, you know, during the election, we made some comparisons between ourselves and another political party who, would you believe it, in Australia we've got a political party called the Shooters, Fishers and Farmers Party.
Oh, my God.
And I just made a couple... I made a couple of statements. It was actually part of our fundraising strategy to talk about how much money they had and how we needed to get as much money as they did, so we had the same number of people elected so we could, you know, take them on the issues. And I received so many death threats, really vile body shaming messages. You know, it was just relentless. They kept sharing it amongst all their Facebook groups and saying, you know, just go for it. And it was, yeah, I mean, it is quite a sort of a disgusting thing, but it's really strong here in Australia. And I don't know if it's specific to the scene here, but it's certainly something that we need to try and be on top of within the Animal Justice Party, and try to create the narrative of truth within that as well.
I think that's the thing.
But we do get a bit of media, and you know, and I guess this is where, sorry, just going back to your question, you know, a lot of social media and other avenues is so important to get our message out there, where we can't get support from the public media.
Yeah. Well, you're on the right side of the truth, so no one can ever fault you for that. Now, as we come hurtling towards the end of 2019, Emma, what do you think the outlook is, say, for 2020 and beyond for the vegan movement worldwide, and indeed in Australia as well?
Look, I think we're truly reaching tipping point. I have spoken, and I guess this is something that's been really giving me a lot of energy going forward is actually speaking to people who are conservative and hard right-wing, people within different movements that are sort of coming to me and saying, oh, look, I don't think anyone will be eating meat in 10 years. You know, I think it's on its way out. I think that the writing's on the wall. I think it's come a lot faster than a lot of people thought it would. But there's going to be a lot of nervousness in the agribusiness industry who will be resisting that change. And I think that the change will happen eventually either way. I think our job is how fast we can get there. And so I guess our push will be to sort of speed up that process and overcome any obstacles that the agribusiness industry throw. But I think, you know, I think it's coming and I think it's coming fast. And, you know, we're gearing up for 2020. One of our big campaigns for the Animal Justice Party for next year and beyond is veganism and plant-based meats and how our state laws can help support these industries and their growth.
That's fantastic, Emma. Look, I can't stress enough the thanks us guys over here would like to express to you and to your party for the hard work that you do and raising the awareness that you do. So thank you from the bottom of all of our hearts for all the hard work that you do, and keep up the good work. And
thank you.
Thanks for joining us today, Emma. Thank you.
Thanks so much.